भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Okay, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 19, entitled King Yayati Achieves Liberation. Text 15. Yadana kurate bhavam sarve bhuteshva mangalam samadrishtestada pumsa sarvasukha mayadishaha Idana kurute bhavam sarvabhuteshva mangalam samadrishte stata pumsa sarvasukha mayadishaha. Please chant. Anybody else? Mataji's? Okay. It's word for word translation. Yada, when. Na, not. Kurute, does. Bhavam, a different attitude of attachment or envy. Sarvabhuteshu, to all living entities. Amangalam, inauspicious. Samadrishte, because of being equipoised. Tada, at that time. Pumsaha, of the person. Sarvaha, all. Sukamayaha, in a happy condition. Dishaha, directions. Translation. When a man is non-envious and does not desire ill fortune for anyone, he is equipoised. For such a person, all directions appear happy. Purport. Prabodhananda Sarasvati said, Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. When one becomes Krishna conscious by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, for him the entire world appears happy, and he has nothing for which to hanker. On the Brahmabhuta stage, or the platform of spiritual realization, there is no lamentation and no material hankering. Nashochati Nakankshati. As long as one lives in the material world, actions and reactions will continue. But when one is affected by such material actions and reactions, he is to be considered free from the danger of being victimized by material desires. The symptoms of those who are satiated with lusty desires are described in this verse. As explained by Śrīla Viṣṇunāda Chakravarti Thakura, when one is not envious even of his enemy, does not expect honor from anyone, but instead desires all well-being, even for his enemy, he is understood via Paramahamsa. One who has fully subdued the lusty desires for sense gratification. verse one more time. Yada na kurite bhavam sarva bhuteshva mangalam samadritesh tadapumsa sarva sukha maya drsha. When a man is non-envious and does not desire ill fortune for anyone, he is equipoised. For such a person, all directions appear happy. Om Gyanati Myandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Yena Tasmay Shri Gurave Namaha. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Vastaya Bhadale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamane. Namaste Sarasvapi Deve Gauravani Prajarine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtatati Shatarine. Vanshikalpa Turibhishta Kripa Sindhibi Evicha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavimbhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasali Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So I was just reading yesterday, actually, in the first canto, there's a purport where Prabhupada's explaining how just the recitation and the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam is actually the only means of self-realization. And we hear, you know, Harinam, Harinam, Harinama Eva Kevalam. You know, chanting of the holy name is the spiritual process of self-realization in this age. So we can understand that the Bhagavatam is actually non-different from Krishna, just like Krishna's name and Krishna are non-different. Same with the Bhagavatam. Just by reciting Bhagavatam every day, one naturally attains affinity for hearing the pastimes of Vasudeva. And he also explains in one of the purports of the first canto that one derives from Srimad Bhagavatam all the benefits that one would derive by being in the personal presence of Krishna himself. And it also explains how Parikshit Maharaj, although he heard so many topics, so much philosophy, so many different pastimes of different incarnations, his final destination was Goloka Vrindavan. He says that in a purport. So we're reading today about this demonic anartha, envy, and how a man who's non-envious, he sees happiness in all directions. So I looked up the definition of envy, and the definition in the dictionary means being desirous of something that someone else has. And usually that desire is filled with, you know, a sort of dislike or hatred of that particular person, because that person has something I don't have. And oftentimes, with that definition, think about when we hear Prabhupada use that word many of the times, it seems like he has a different definition. You know, it seems like he uses the word envy, that just like you dislike the person. Not that you want something that the person has, but you just don't like him. Like, for example, there was a news reporter, and he was asking Prabhupada, you know, why do the public, why do they sometimes criticize your movement, and why do they seem inimical to your devotees? And then Prabhupada just used one word. He said, oh, envy. And they're envious. And then just recently I was reading in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the purport, it was explaining how people slaughter animals in the slaughterhouses because they're envious of the animals. So if we think about the definition I just quoted from the dictionary, how can, you know, why would the public be envious of us? If anything, they just don't like us. They don't want to be like us. They don't want to dress like us and shave their heads. And how can, you know, people be envious of animals? It's not that they want to become an animal. I mean, subconsciously they do. But my humble understanding is that the root of all envy is the reason why we're in this material world in the first place. It's because we're envious of Krishna. You know, we want to be the controller. We want to be the enjoyer. And therefore, that manifests in this world as being envious of people who are representing God, such as the devotees, being envious of God's expansions, such as the animals. So in this way, we can understand, you know, Prabhupada's use of the word envy. And this purport in the very beginning, it quotes Prabodhananda Sarasvati. And he was actually in Vraj. He's one of the Ashtasakis, Tunga Vidya, which is one of the most intimate associates, Srimati Radharani. But in this world, as Prabodhananda Sarasvati, he is the uncle of Gopalabhata Goswami. And if you really think about it, you know, the six Goswamis are also very intimate associates of Radha and Krishna, topmost devotees in all of existence. But they're the emblem of non-enviousness, right? It says that, you know, that even they were liked by the ruffians and the gentle because, you know, they're non-envious. They're like the emblem of humility. So how can someone on the topmost platform of spiritual realization think himself the lowest, like Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami? He's saying, you know, he's lower than the worm and stool. And he really meant it. It wasn't just like a figure of speech or like poetry. He like seriously felt like that in his heart. It's inconceivable. And when we hear the six Goswamis, we understand that they left an aristocratic situation. You know, they were from very wealthy families. Some of them had very beautiful wives. You know, any man in this world would, you know, dream of having. But they left everything to come here in Vrindavan and sleep under a different tree every night. You know, in the hot summer, they would just sleep outside with, you know, only the tree shading them. In the cold winters, no blanket, no house, just a tree. And my spiritual master was explaining how actually they're very intelligent. Because although they left, you know, a materially prosperous situation, they were sleeping under the trees of Vrindavan. And he was explaining that all the opulences in the heavenly planets, if you put them together, they don't equal one tree in Vrindavan. Because every tree in Vrindavan is a Kalpa Vriksha tree. Under its roots has all jewels and gems. So actually they became the most opulent by sleeping under the simple trees in Vrindavan. And my spiritual master was also explaining that if you take all of the opulences of all the Vaikuntha planets and you put them together, they don't equal one speck of dust in Vrindavan. And he was explaining how, you know, we don't even think about that. We inhale the dust every day, the dust is landing on our head. You know, oftentimes we brush it off. More opulence than all the Vaikuntha planets. And then he quoted one Purana, I forget which Purana, I think Nishinga Purana. He was saying that all the holy places and all the universes are contained within one single leaf of a Tulsi plant, within one Tulsi leaf, all the holy places. So this is why the devotees, you know, Prabhupada is quoting or referring to a verse in this purport, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatman Shuchitina Kankshiti from Bhagavad Gita, that the devotee doesn't lament, he doesn't hanker for anything. Why? Because he actually has the greatest wealth. Although it seems that he's living simply, but if one has Krishna, Krishna is the source of everything. So therefore you have everything. And you know, non-devotees, they don't really they can't understand this. Like oftentimes in America, you know, people will think that, you know, the devotees who are distributing books that were con artists, because, you know, in the meantime, you know, they're spending thousands of dollars trying to be comfortable, trying to be in a safe situation, trying to enjoy in this world. But then we approach them, you know, with the Bhagavad Gita or one of Srila Prabhupada's books. You know, here is the source of everything. You get all the opulence that you can ever imagine, more than you can imagine. You become free from suffering from all of existence. And all we ask is just a small donation to help cover the printing cost. And then they say, oh, I knew it. You know, you just want my money. You know, they can't conceive of the fact that, you know, I even have to explain, it's not for me. The money is not for me. I don't keep a penny of it. It just goes to print more books so we can share the knowledge. And I've even had people accuse me of being a liar. You know, they don't believe that I'm not keeping any of the money. It's inconceivable for people to think, because it's the complete opposite of what everybody's doing in this world. I remember my spiritual master was also explaining how this verse, Trinadapi Sunichena, you know, being more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, it completely contradicts material existence. It's the opposite of what everybody is trying to achieve. So also this hankering and this lamenting, it's not just a gross thing, like a physical thing, that you're hankering after women or money, or that you lament because you lost your job or your wife or whatever. But it's very subtle also. You know, we could be hankering for, nobody can even know it too, it's within ourselves. So we're hankering for honor and respect. We want people to think we're advanced devotees, and you know, we're really good at devotional service. So this is another sort of hankering, and lamenting when we're dishonored or when people don't show us respect is also illusion, you know, it's Maya. So Prabhupada makes this reference to this verse, 1854 in the Bhagavad Gita, and I was reading it yesterday because I was kind of preparing what I was going to say. And in the purport, Prabhupada says here in this verse that, you know, a living entity who's engaged in Krishna's service, he's fooling himself. He doesn't need anything. And he gives the example that just like a river is cleansed of all dirty water. Right? So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking how, you know, the raindrop, you know, when it rains, when the rain is in the cloud, it's considered pure. You can actually drink that water. It's purified. But when it falls and it hits the ground, it becomes polluted with dirt and stool and whatever else is on the ground. It becomes contaminated. You don't want to drink that. But there's a process of water purification called reverse osmosis, you know, where it actually takes out all the impurities of the water, brings it back to its natural pure state. So, in the same way, we're pure in the spiritual world. And just like when that raindrop, when the jiva falls into the material existence, it mixes with the three modes of material nature, becomes contaminated, it's in its unnatural state. So, the sadhana bhakti process is like a detox. You know the word detox? It's like a special diet that people go on, or like a fasting where you're detoxing your body, you're taking all the toxins out of your body. And that's what sadhana bhakti is we're taking all of the toxins out of our heart. And oftentimes when people go through a detox, they become extremely sick at first because they're purging all those toxins out and they come to the surface. But if they tolerate that sickness, when they heal, when they recover from getting sick, they're completely healthy. Their immune system is like rejuvenated. So in the same way, you know, when we chant Hare Krishna, you know, it's like Prabhupada was explaining how when we chant Hare Krishna, it's Radha and Krishna dancing on our tongue. And my spiritual master oftentimes gives the example how Krishna danced on the hoods of Kaliya serpent. And he said, the serpent of a snake kind of looks like our tongue a little bit, you know. And when we chant, Krishna's dancing on the hoods of our tongue, and a lot of the times the impurities come out, the anarthas come out, and sometimes it's really hard to tolerate. Just like when Kaliya was being danced on by Krishna, at first all the poisons came out. Remember, all the poisons came out and he was suffering like anything. And then he started vomiting blood. And then, after that, he was purified because all the toxins came out. And he got the mercy of his of the devotees, which were his wives, the Nagapatnis. And after that, because he got the mercy of the devotees and because all the toxins were out, that's when he surrendered to Krishna and became a devotee. Kaliya became a devotee. So in the same way, you know, all the Kaliya-like creatures in this material world actually have a chance by Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So I was also reading part of this verse, the same one, 1854, Bhagavad Gita, in the purport. Later on, it correlates with today's verse, because today's verse, the translation says, a man who's non-envious and does not desire ill fortune for anyone, for him all directions appear happy. He's just a happy guy. So in this verse, 1854, purport Prabhupada says something similar. He says, the world is miserable for the materially infected person. But for the devotee, the entire world is as good as Vaikuntha, or the spiritual sky. So I'm reading the book Radha Damodar Vilas, and it's the pastimes of in the 1970s when some of Prabhupada's disciples made a traveling Sankirtan party consisting of I don't know how many buses, like 5 buses and a bunch of vans, where brahmacharis and sannyasis were traveling around America doing Harinam book distribution and stuff like that. And one devotee was explaining how, you know, Vishnu Jan Maharaj, everybody loved him because he was very charismatic, he was very humble, and he was very absorbed in the holy names. And he was explaining how, you know, Vishnu Jan Swami didn't see that, okay, there's Krishna consciousness, and then there's the outside world, you know, the duality. But rather, he saw a Krishna conscious world. Everywhere he saw Krishna consciousness. And then he was explaining that he also didn't see that there's us, you know, there's the devotees, and then there's them out there, the non-devotees, the karmis. But rather, he saw there's just us. Everyone's a devotee at heart. And one Mataji was explaining how when she joined the party, she was brand new, and all the devotees treated her just like another devotee. They didn't look down on her or treat her like she was insignificant. And she said because of this, she was encouraged to actually stick around, and she's still a devotee. She got initiated by Prabhupada. And this actually pleases Krishna. You know, in the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you know, the humble sage sees with equal vision, you know, all different species of life. It's not that one human is better than another human, or one jiva is better than another jiva in a different type of body. We're all part and parcel of Krishna. And there's this one very amazing saintly person. One Prabhupada disciple, Mother Nidra, she lives in Denver, Colorado, which is in America. And she has been steady in her service of book distribution for more than 40 years. And I think she goes out every day, every single day of the week, except for Sundays, where she stays back at the Sunday feast, and then she greets all the new people to give them books. She's always constantly engaged in service. And I had the great fortune to associate with her a little bit. I asked her one time, we were out at some outdoor mall, the devotees were doing Harinam, a few devotees were distributing books, and I asked her for some advice, you know, like, what's the right mood, what's the right mentality to have when we're engaged in Sankirtan. And she said, well, my meditation is that I'm never alone, you know, it's not just me against the world, but we have to understand that the whole parampara is standing right behind me. I got Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, all the 6 Goswamis, all the way up to Radha and Krishna, they're right behind me. And they're encouraging me, and they want this person to get the mercy. So I remember hearing also one devotee, friend of mine who I know very well, he was walking down the street and distributing books also. And externally, if you see it, it's just a guy in the middle of a completely Maya situation, people shopping and trying to enjoy, and there's no Harinam going on. There's rather this complete opposite. There's karmi music and ridiculous sound vibration. But he was saying what he was seeing was he didn't physically see them, but when he would close his eyes, he understood that the Panchatattva were right there walking up and down the street having a Harinam Sankirtan. So that's what his vision was. You know, that's the vision of, you know, the devotee, is despite the external situation, he's constantly absorbed. Just like Lord Chaitanya is describing in Sanatana Goswami, how we should live a double life. And he explains what this means. That he gives the example that when a wife has a paramour, or a side boyfriend or a lover, she doesn't want her husband to find out, obviously. That's a big no-no. So what she does at home is she carries on the household chores even nicer than before, so her husband would not expect anything. So in the same way, he explains that the devotee lives a double life. It also explains one who is practicing rag bhakti on externally, you would not know the difference. He is acting just like someone, just like a brand new bhakta. He's going through the motions of vaidhi sadhana and bhakti, it seems like. But the internal mood is different. So we're simultaneously becoming absorbed in shastra. We're simultaneously preaching, trying to give the holy names to others. But we're also relishing. We're also having our own bhajan and our own relationship with Krishna. And this is Lord Chaitanya's definition of how, to Sanatana Goswami, how the devotee lives a double life. And I remember hearing one class by Radhakund Mataji. And this was a couple years ago, so I might get a few details a little bit mixed up, but the message is the same. She was explaining how Jai Gauranitaya Krishna Balaram Shishi Radhasham Sundara Ladigita Fishaka Ki Jai. She was explaining how when she was distributing books, she had a book table, and she was reading in Prabhupada's books how, you know, nectar instruction, I don't know where she read it, but she was explaining this, but in my mind, nectar of instruction explains how, you know, one should perform devotional service on the banks of Radhakund. You know, it's like the top, it's explained the topmost place to perform devotional service. So she was thinking, maybe I should be spending more time in Radhakund. And by doing this, she might be interfering with her Sankirtan Seva. So she was kind of thinking this, and she didn't really know which direction to go. And then she had a dream in the middle of this contemplation. She had a dream one night that the place she was doing, she had a book table, actually turned into Radhakund. The place transformed into Radhakund. And she had this intuition in her heart where Prabhupada was saying, no need to go physically anywhere because Sankirtan is non-different from Radhakund. You know? That's how we serve Radhakund. We heard that from Dina Bandhu Prabhu's book distribution. If you actually think about it, books also mean, you know, the whole Sankirtan mission, Harinam, and preaching, trying to bring others to Krishna, rather, I should say. And if we think about it, you know, that some of the top two most prominent acharyas, most recent acharyas, Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta, when they were together on the banks of Radhakund, the topmost place in the whole universe, they could be talking about anything. They could be explaining Krishna's Rasa Leela or anything. But what did Bhaktisiddhanta decide to talk about? Was preaching and book distribution and bringing others to Krishna. So that's actually how we serve the Holy Dham, by bringing others to the Holy Dham. And I also shared this last year, but I'll share it again because it kind of goes in line with what I'm talking about here. I also had a dream one time. Sometimes in America we go to music festivals, and what those are, they're huge concerts where people camp out and we go from tent to tent trying to introduce people to Krishna consciousness. And I had a dream one night after this. It's a severe yajna, actually. It's really hot and we're out like 8-10 hours a day, and it's a really bizarre place, to say the least. And but I had a dream one night that I was walking in the festival, and I got to the end of the festival, and then the festival transformed into Navadvip. And there was only one house, a dilapidated house. The house was falling apart, kind of. It looked old from the outside. So I went into the house, and the only thing that was in the house was, there was nothing in there except for one table and a picture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And I just saw that picture, and I also had the realization that he is extremely pleased with this service and that I should continue with it. And then one of the pujaris, or someone who was taking care of the house, came. And I spoke to him in my dream. But anyways, that's the point. Is, you know, Sanatana Goswami also explains how if you take bell metal and you mix it with mercury, it turns into gold. You know, this is alchemy. It's a scientific process. So, but he says in the same way, the one who gets initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, Diksha initiation, he is transformed into a Vaishnava, transformed into a Brahmana. So in the same way, anywhere that Sankirtan Yoga is being performed actually turns in to Navadvip, turns into Vrindavan. And Prabhupada explains in a purport how a rich man who has a lot of money in the bank, he can go anywhere and he lives a comfortable life, you know, because he has money. He can buy a hotel room or whatever and buy nice food. So in the same way, someone who has Krishna in his heart, a devotee, anywhere he goes, he's happy. Narayana parasarve nakutashtana bibhiti swarga pavarga arkishu apitulata darshanaha. Now, to a devotee, it doesn't matter. You know, heaven, hell, liberation, spiritual world, he's always absorbed. So it doesn't really matter where he goes. And actually, in one purport to the Bhagavatam, I'll just read a couple sentences where... okay, here we go. It is explaining this, how anywhere we go, the devotee is relishing Krishna. He's... This is a purport where he says that Ajamil, you know, at the time of death, he was chanting the names of Narayan. And then he has explained, even Chitraketu Maharaj, he was worshipping the Lord when he was in hell. And it describes in the Nishinga Purana, it is said that as the hellish inhabitants began to chant the holy name of the Lord, they began to be elevated from hell. And Devras Muni also supported this. And he said, simply by chanting Harinam, the inhabitants of hell became released from their hellish persecution. So it's also explained somewhere that Krishna is wherever the devotees are congregationally chanting. Krishna is there present, for sure. So Krishna is also in hell when the inhabitants are chanting congregationally. And if we actually meditate on what we're doing, you know, this book is, Prabhupada said, written by Krishna. That's what he told one devotee, is, I didn't write these books. Prabhupada, or Krishna sits down right next to me and he tells me what to write, so I just write down what he tells me. So this being not different from Krishna, you know, all, like I said, all the holy places being contained within one leaf of a tulsi plant, you know, Krishna being anywhere where the congregational chanting is going on, then we're always in Vrindavan. You know, our Prabhupada established temples all over the world where he says they're non-different from Vaikuntha. They're embassies of Vrindavan, just like we have an American embassy here in India. You go there, it's physically in India, technically, physically, to our eyes, but you're on American soil. You're on American land. That's what, at least that's what the government says. So in the same way, Prabhupada established spiritual embassies all over the world. And he even said in one letter that the traveling Sankirtan buses and vans are traveling temples. So the van is also Vrindavan. And, you know, because we travel in a van in America. So it's actually Vrindavan. And we actually call it Vrindavan, like Vrindavan, and this is just to help us kind of remember what we're actually doing. And Mahaprabhu actually teaches us this vision by example in the pastimes with the Rath Yatra. It seems, well, okay, I'll explain a little bit. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, we all know that, he's in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So he's always relishing you know, separation from Krishna. And in the Rath Yatra pastimes, what's going on is Lord Chaitanya in the mood of Srimati Radharani, he's bringing Lord Jagannath, who he's seeing as Shyamasundar, back to Vrindavan so that the Vrindavan inhabitants can have Krishna again. And it explains in one song by Narottam Das Thakur how Goloka, Vrindavan, descends to this world as the Sankirtan of the holy names. So when Mahaprabhu is performing his pastimes at Rath Yatra, externally, if you don't have the full picture, you're just seeing a person who's gold, who's really tall, dancing in front of some deity, and the procession going on and people chanting. But there's a whole internal reality that's going on. Radharani is bringing Shyamasundar back. She's with her confidential associates in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates. They're performing congregational chanting, which is non-different from the pastimes of Vrindavan. And Lord Chaitanya was even seeing that, now this is in Puri, Jagannath Puri, he's seeing in the road that on the side of the roads there was white sand. And he was seeing that white sand as the same sand on the shores of the Yamuna. And he would see gardens on the side of the road. And those gardens transformed into the pleasure groves of Vrindavan. So my suggestion is that, you know, obviously he's performing those pastimes for us to relish, to meditate on, but to also give us an example of what we should be aspiring for, you know, the vision we should be having. And it also explains that there were seven different Sankirtan groups. There's a group here, a group there, a group there, a group there. And Mahaprabhu actually expanded himself where he was dancing in each group simultaneously. And not everybody could see this. They just thought that Mahaprabhu's in our group. You know? But it explains that there were a few internal devotees that can actually see what was really going on. And one of those few devotees was Maharaj Prataparudra. And it explains how the reason why he was able to see this is because in the beginning of the procession, he saw Maharaj Prataparudra sweeping the ground in front of the Jagannath cart. And he was seeing that someone on an elevated position as the king, taking such a menial and humble role, I'm going to give this person my mercy. So when Mahaprabhu expanded himself into all the Sankirtan groups, Maharaj Prataparudra could see this, and it actually, you know, manifested more love for the Lord. You know, how wonderful is Lord Chaitanya that he could do such a wonderful thing. So what I think about is just like Mother Nidra explaining how the Parampara is always behind us. Every Sankirtan party in the whole world that's going on, Lord Chaitanya is personally present dancing. And only the internal devotees can see this. And Prabhupada explains how book distribution non-different from chanting. So one devotee could be in the middle of a completely chaotic situation in this world, somewhere in America, in a parking lot, somewhere, a dirty, filthy place, and not really have any devotee association, seemingly, at least to the external vision. But his spiritual master is always with him, and Lord Chaitanya is there dancing. The Panchatattva is there dancing, just like I was explaining that devotee saw in his mind's eye, that he had that realization that the Harinam was going on right behind him. So the reason some devotees can understand this, some devotees cannot see this, is not by force. It's not that you're going to sit down and read Krishna book and enter into Krishna's pastimes by force. It doesn't work like that. Everything in Krishna consciousness is by revelation. Krishna gives us realization according to our sincerity and our surrender and our humble service attitude. Krishna gives, you know, the gift of revelation. Just like he gave, you know, the eyes to Prataparudra, and, you know, even in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 11, Krishna gives Arjuna divine eyes. You know, the divine eyes to see what's really going on. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Valochanena, the eyes smeared with the salve of love, sees Shyamasundar wherever he goes. And also, in the Bhagavad Gita, it's explaining how Sanjaya, who's the one that spoke the whole Gita to Dhritarashtra, he was not physically present on the battlefield. But he had a mystic power where he can see what was going on, and therefore he was narrating. And in chapter 18, text 75, he explains why he got this power. He said, "It is by the mercy of Vyas," which is the spiritual master, "that I have heard these most confidential talks between the master of all mysticism, Krishna," who was speaking personally to Arjuna. So it was by the mercy of his spiritual master Vyasadeva that he was able to see Krishna's pastimes personally going on. And so it's not by force. Like the scientists, they're trying to, by force, understand the cosmos and the whole situation, the universe. But a simple Mataji, you know, cowherd lady of Vrindavan, Mother Yashoda, saw the whole cosmos, saw everything in the universe by revelation within the small little mouth of Krishna. And that's the difference between a devotee and a materialist. So my friend, one brahmachari in America, he went to a prestigious university, USC. Maybe you have to pay thousands of dollars to go there. It's considered one of the topmost universities. And by force, people are trying to understand the meaning to life. But he explains that when he got a Bhagavad Gita, he understood more in 1 hour from a $5 book than he learned in a few years, you know, paying thousands of dollars at a university. So one thing I like to, we should all remember, is that helps us to really become absorbed, is as we speak right now and every moment of the day, you're going to try to think of this today, that everything you're doing, as we're doing it, simultaneously, Krishna's pastimes are happening in Golok Vrindavan and here in Vrindavan, Bhumi Vrindavan also. They're happening right now as we speak, but we're not able to see them in our current state. And the deities, obviously, are non-different from Krishna. And Krishna's been standing there for 45 years, you know, smiling, just standing, watching people come and go. And it explains how having darshan doesn't mean just looking at the Lord and, you know, obviously we appreciate His beauty, but real darshan is actually, you know, Krishna seeing us. He's observing us. And He's always observing us. As Paramatma, you know, He's observing our mind, observing our heart, seeing are we ready actually to understand Vraj. My spiritual master explains that if you actually have like one speck of pride in your heart, you cannot understand Vrindavan. Just one speck. It's like such a heavy statement. I've got a lot of work to do. You know, it's just like Narottam Das Thakur explains in that song, Gauranga Bolite Habe, you have to get the mercy of Lord Nityananda purifies your heart before you can understand Vrindavan. So, as I was saying, you know, Krishna's pastimes are happening as we speak. They're happening at every moment. And it explains in Krishna book that when we hear the pastimes, it is non-different from actually being there. Bhagavatam explains how there's different elements that you can use to make a deity. You can use wood, you can use marble, you can use paint, and different materials. One of those materials is the mind. And all of them are considered authorized forms of the deity. Within your mind, you can actually meditate on the deity. It's non-different from Krishna. So when we're meditating on Krishna's pastimes, it's non-different from being there. And as we sing these songs, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave us so many nice songs that Yosumati Nandana Vraja Bharanagara, he's explaining what's going on in the spiritual world. And Prabhupada explains that this song, Jai Radha Madhava, contains everything. Just this four lines contains everything in all of existence. So it's a nice meditation to have. These songs actually bring us to Vrindavan. They bring us into Navadvip. And this verse, you know, like my spiritual master was saying, like even with the speck of pride, you cannot understand Vrindavan. This verse, Trinada Pisu Nichi Na, he often quotes. He says it's his favorite verse. You know, being more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, being free from all prestige is a very tricky thing. Because the definition of prestige literally means, you know, widespread admiration for your qualities or widespread fame because of the achievements you've done, the things that you've done. So in that word, actually, the origins of that word is from French. And the French translation of prestige is literally illusion. That's actually the exact translation of prestige is illusion. So when we're prestigious, that, you know, I'm a good kirtaniya, a good book distributor, I'm good at giving class, or I've been a devotee for so many years, you know, this is actually illusion, according to the real definition of the word. And I remember my spiritual master was also explaining how in Vrindavan, when Krishna killed the Keshi demon, the Keshi demon actually represents the false notion that I'm an advanced devotee, you know, that I've been around for so many years and I'm really good at devotional service. And this demon, if you think about it, it's a huge demon. It says his head was touching the clouds. So this prestige is actually, it's a huge demon within our heart. It's like a monster trying to like take away any good qualities we have. So we have to smash this demon by taking shelter of Guru and Krishna. And it, you know, if you're paying dandavats on the floor, it's not possible that you can fall down. You know, when you're standing up and walking, you can fall down, you can trip, fall on the ground. But if you're paying dandavats, you can't fall down because you're already on the ground. So if you humble yourself and you're constantly paying dandavats to the Vaishnavas, then there's no question of fall down from spiritual life. Remember, Giriraj Swami was explaining how he was present when one devotee asked Prabhupada, what is the duty of a guru? And then Prabhupada explained, well, the duty of the guru is to serve Krishna. And then the devotee said, well, then what's the duty of the disciple? And then Prabhupada explained, the duty of the disciple is to serve Krishna. So this should be our understanding, is that whenever we're performing devotional service, this is actually our spiritual master working through us, and we're just an instrument. Actually, our spiritual master, you know, who are we to be personally dressing Radha Shyama Sundar? You know, but our spiritual master is the exalted personality who can have that service, and I'm just here assisting him. And we can apply that to all different services. So, I remember there's one very amazing Prabhupada disciple, Amala Bhakta Swami. He lives in Los Angeles, where I'm from. And he was explaining how whenever someone gives you honor or respect, it's not that you have to artificially say, oh no, Prabhu, I don't deserve it. I mean, that's a nice mood. But, you know, thank you. But internally, you're giving everything to your spiritual master. You know, oh, you're such a great devotee. Oh, thank you, Prabhu. And you give it to your spiritual master internally. He said the moment that you think it's for yourself is like the moment that you start your fall down. You know, it turns into poison at that point. And if we think about it, you know, Krishna consciousness is a very subtle thing. This verse, non-enviousness, is very subtle. Envy or non-envy, humility, pride, it's a subtle thing. You know, if I'm proud, you wouldn't be able to know, because maybe I won't say anything about it. If I'm envious of you, you wouldn't know. It's very subtle. So in the same way, everything in Krishna consciousness is a very subtle thing. Like, for example, you know, just recently, within the past few days, when I'm chanting japa, one thing that really bothers me is when flies land on my face. You know, they like go in my eye, and they go in my nostril, and the flies, you know, I'm just like, get away. And then it was kind of like bothering me. But then I just changed my attitude. Now I'm trying to change my attitude of gratitude. I was thinking, okay, you know, what's actually really going on is I don't belong here. You know, this is by Krishna's divine mercy that I'm even here in Vrindavan. And these flies, this is their home. They're actually Dandavasis. So I should be paying obeisances to them. And it's such a privilege that these flies are landing on my face, that these Dandavasis are actually giving me the dust of their lotus feet. And just with that mentality, I actually started relishing the flies landing on my face. It was a complete change, the whole situation. And same thing with the milkman who comes every day with the bowl to bring the milk to the deities. It's a very heavy milk thing, actually, if you help him out. It's pretty heavy. And I'm chanting around Tulsi outside, sometimes he would call me over to ask me to bring it over. I don't mind doing service at all, obviously, you know, we're supposed to be doing service. But when I'm chanting japa, one thing that also bugs me is when, you know, people try to, like, interrupt my japa. It's one of my things that I have. But he would ask me during japa, and the first couple of times, I'm like, man, why is he asking me out of everyone? You know, can't he see him? Can't he see him chanting japa? Why is he gotta bother me? But after a few times, I was like, actually, what's really going on is this milk is coming from Krishna's cows. And I'm actually having the privilege of bringing, you know, the cow's milk to Radha Shama Sundar and Krishna Balaram, Gaurini Thai. Like, what an amazing privilege. So I started actually relishing him. I started relishing him asking me to come help him. So now I actually stand out there sometimes and I want to help out because I had changed my attitude. So I got a few more minutes. Let me try to cram in a few things. So this humility, you know, my spiritual master explains that real humility doesn't actually necessarily mean thinking less of yourself, but rather thinking of yourself less. And if we think about Arjuna, you know, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, you know, a false sense of humility would him being, even though he heard the whole Gita, him not fighting because he's too humble, he doesn't want to hurt anyone. That's false humility. Rather, real humility is that he's surrendered to the will of Krishna and that he'll do whatever Krishna says. Just like Prabhupada did huge things, but he would always say that is only because I tried to follow the instructions of my spiritual master. And oftentimes he would give all credit to his disciples. You know, these young American and European boys and girls have come to help me. I was just loitering on the street and they came and they helped me out. So this is actually true humility. And getting back, there's a lot more I wanted to say. I always run out of time. But this whole idea of hearing Krishna's pastimes with humility and being able to be there is also what to speak of hearing Krishna's pastimes and being there. We're actually actively participating in Lord Chaitanya's Gaura Lila. As we speak, Krishna's, or Prabhupada explains how ISKCON is the incarnation of Krishna in this age of Kali Yuga. And one Prabhupada disciple, Jagadish Prabhu, in a Bhagavatam class had explained that his favorite thing, and one of his favorite things in devotional service, is when he sees someone brand new start chanting, or when he sees someone brand new get a book and appreciate it. Because he says, what I'm actually seeing is a manifestation of Lord Chaitanya's Leela that has never before taken place in all of existence. And I'm seeing it happen right before my eyes. And this whole idea of non-enviousness, in the 1867 Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains how this knowledge should not be explained to those who are envious. Yeah. I remember our temple president in Los Angeles, Subhas Prabhu, he was explaining how, you know, there's a boxer, you know, like a professional boxer in America back in the 70s named Muhammad Ali. And he was very famous at that time. And he was known for, you know, being really good. I think he lost one fight in his whole career. And he would always say, I'm the greatest. No one can beat me. I'm the best. No one in the world can ever compare to me. And he was famous for talking like that, you know, a little bit arrogant. But Savas Prabhu actually met him in an airport. And he was thinking, I got to give him a book. So Savas Prabhu came up and gave Muhammad Ali the Bhagavad Gita. And Ali appreciated it, grabbed it. And then there's a whole crowd around him, paparazzi, like, you know, cameramen, because he's very famous. And Ali lifted the book up, and he pointed to Prabhupada, and he said, this man is the greatest man in the world right now. You know, Muhammad Ali is being famous for saying, I'm the greatest. And here he's saying, you know, Prabhupada is the most greatest. So one time, one Prabhupada disciple kind of deviated a little bit and started doing some weird magic, mystic yoga on the banks of some river and left ISKCON. And the devotees found out about this. And Tamal Krishna Goswami told Prabhupada about this person. And this person continued doing nonsense. And then Tamal Krishna Goswami asked Prabhupada, are you going to reject him? Because he's obviously not following. And then Prabhupada said, no, I'm not going to reject him. And then tomorrow Krishna Goswami said, well, Prabhupada, don't you have to draw the line somewhere? You know? And then Prabhupada explains that you do not understand the mercy of Lord Nityananda. That Lord Nityananda's mercy is for everyone. And in one purport, give me one more minute, maybe 70 seconds. Prabhupada was explaining how he doesn't care about the qualification of someone coming to Krishna consciousness. Homeless, crazy, whatever. But if someone's willing to surrender and they're sincere, then I'll accept him. He explains that in a purport. And I had one time, I was supposed to be distributing books, but I was in a little bit of illusion, and I thought I needed some rest. So I was resting in the Sankirtan van, and then all of a sudden we have Murtis of Gaurini Thai. The Murtis never, they don't fall, you know, they're standing up straight. But as I was laying down, somehow or another, Lord Nityananda fell on my chest. And I was like, alright, he wants me to distribute books, okay. So I got up out of my hazy ignorance, and I went out, started distributing, and it was tough, and people weren't stopping. And actually, rather the opposite, they were really mean and rude. They didn't want anything to do with me. And then all of a sudden, I'm about to just call it a day, and I just was like, all right, I'll talk to this last guy. And I stopped this guy, and he was like the nicest guy in the world. And he's like, yeah, I'll take this book, but not for me. Actually, you caught me in a very awkward situation. I'm actually heading to a hospice. And a hospice is a place where people are getting ready to leave their body. And he's saying, my father is in the hospice right now, and he really likes to read philosophy. So I'm going to give him this book, and he'll probably read it before he dies. So I was just thinking how Lord Nityananda, he fans the spark of any person who's just a little bit inquisitive, willing to accept the mercy. Somehow or another, he's coming in the form of a devotee, in the form of the holy name, in the form of a book, trying to give Krishna consciousness to other people. And just like the other class, I had more I wanted to say, but time is up. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, Hare Krishna.